Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Voices of Forestry podcast. I'm your host, Seth Stevenson, the Communications Coordinator with the Arkansas Forestry Association. And today, we have a brand new topic, the Wildlife Conservation Initiative, that we're going to be discussing today with our brand new guest. But before we do that, I do want to give a special shout out and a thank you to this month's sponsor, Potlatch Deltic. We're going to hear a little bit more from them later on in this episode. But for now, we're going to introduce our guest who's joining us by phone this month. So it might sound a little different, and we appreciate you guys bearing with us here. But today I'm joined by Kit Hart, the Director of Forest Planning and Environment with Potlatch Deltic. Kit, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Seth. Exciting to do this.
Now, I know you're like over in the northwest part of the country, and you're actually, I think, closer to Arkansas today, but we're happy that we were able to get this phone call kind of settled and situated so we can talk about the WCI.
Yeah, I'm based out of Spokane, Washington, but I spend about half of my time down in the south where most of Potlatch Deltic's timberland and mills are, and I'm actually in Mississippi today, so in your neighboring state.
Okay. Well, now, that kind of leads us into a little bit about what you do, Kit. If you don't mind letting the folks know kind of what your background is with your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in the forest industry about 30 years. I started working in the early 90s with George Pacific. Then I worked many years for Plum Creek Timber Company. And about 6 years ago, I came to Potlatch Deltic and started in my role with Potlatch Deltic. And so, my background is timber and wildlife. I've spent basically my whole life outdoors and hunting and fishing and recreating, hiking, and that kind of thing. And then I took that love and that interest, and I got my formal education in fisheries and wildlife and forestry, including a bachelor's degree from Colorado State and a master's degree from Mississippi State, the Bulldogs.
Okay, and now you, I guess I want to kind of touch base here too. The Wildlife Conservation Initiative that we're discussing today isn't necessarily a Potlatch Deltic run program, but it is more with the National Alliance of Forest Owners, NAFO, and you have a role with them as well, correct?
Yes, I do. I chair the Wildlife Task Group for NAFO. So it's very much an initiative of NAFO, and it's been a priority work project for NAFO over the last, well, really 5 or 6 years.
Okay, awesome. And so let's kind of hop into what it is we're talking about today, Kit. Could you just explain to the audience and a little bit to me, if you don't mind, what exactly is the Wildlife Conservation Initiative?
Yeah, the Wildlife Conservation Initiative, or WCI, is in its essence is voluntary cooperative conservation partnership between NAFO, NAFO members like Potlatch Deltic, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and NACASI, which is the National Council for Air and Stream Improvement, which is a science group that industry has worked with for 60 years to collect data and help get the data and science that industry needs to improve our environmental outcomes and put conservation on the ground.
And where, I know you mentioned to me that Arkansas doesn't quite have one of these just yet, but where are some of the other states that this has been implemented?
Yeah, the Wildlife Conservation Initiative has been implemented across the United States. There's currently 14 different projects going on, and it really touches every region of the country where timber is produced, and that includes 6 of the 8 U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regions that they have operating. It's touching on a variety of species, pollinators, birds, turtles, aquatic species, and just a lot of species that are common, and understanding how working forests, sustainably managed forests, support even the common species as well.
And so this may seem like a dumb question, Kit, but I want to ask it if you don't mind. Why did NAFO, why did Fish and Wildlife, why did all of these groups see a need to create and implement something like the WCI?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, Seth. The reason is that there has been, through the history of the Endangered Species Act, there's been some kind of unfortunate, regulatory interactions and landowners and the Fish and Wildlife Service. And that was a bit of a history that we needed to get past. We needed to look for ways to operate in a trusted, collaborative way where we have relationships with the Fish and Wildlife Service. They can understand forestry and best management practices and things that we do on the ground, and we can understand, you know, their regulatory challenges. About 13 years ago, Seth, there was the Fish and Wildlife Service was evaluating about 500 species for potential listing, and you know that was a little bit of a concern for landowners, and so we wanted to go about finding a way to demonstrate the value of sustainably managed forest lands for wildlife and wildlife conservation. And we also wanted to find a way to develop a trusted and collaborative relationship with the Fish and Wildlife Service. And so that's why it came about.
So it sounds a lot like, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Arkansas's best management practices, but it sounds like a similar situation where we as a state created these quote-unquote rules that are voluntary to kind of help stave off potential regulation from our state government. Is that so? It sounds like a very similar kind of situation for with this.
Very, very similar, Seth. Yeah, the idea was that if we got to know each other, if we developed trusted relationships with the service, and if they could gain an understanding of the value of working forests for wildlife, that there would be an opportunity to do exactly as you say and accomplish what we need to accomplish for species through a program like voluntary best management practices for water quality protection. And it's working. We've been successful at establishing that relationship, and it's working for that purpose, which is not only to avoid regulation, but to avoid that sort of conflict and tension that develops when you're working under more of a regulatory umbrella rather than collaboratively and cooperatively.
Well, let me ask you this, Kit. How, since this is a voluntary program, how has the response been from other companies or even other landowners when you presented this idea to them? What's been their response to this?
You know, it's been a building response. I think that most of the NAFO members from the very beginning embraced the idea, welcomed an opportunity to have a collaborative and trusted way to accomplish species conservation rather than a strictly regulatory approach. For the initial part of this initiative, as it's kind of developed and become more formal, it's been focused on NAFO member companies and their land ownership. And it's growing. It's growing within NAFO. We're getting more and more projects. We're getting more and more participation. We're getting more and more Fish and Wildlife Service regions involved. And we're also moving more and more towards getting state wildlife agencies and state forestry associations involved as well. And there's definitely opportunities for that involvement as this continues to grow in the future.
So, Kate, we've mentioned NAFO and Fish and Wildlife. Who are all of the partners involved with the WCI? And I guess what exactly is their role? Because I know there's a process to this program. Could you kind of explain who these groups are and what role they play?
Yeah, absolutely. So NAFO membership, I think there's about 46 million acres of timberland owned by NAFO members. And so that gives a great land base for the initiative to start working on. So the official partners in this are all of the NAFO members under the NAFO umbrella and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and all of their field offices across the country and the National Council for Air and Stream Improvement. Those are the official three core members. And then state wildlife agencies and, you know, forestry associations are obviously partners with NAFO on a lot of things. And, you know, that's kind of the idea of getting the word out for doing things like this podcast, is just to get the word out on the program and how successful it's been so far, and try and develop that trust relationship across forest landowners and the Fish and Wildlife Service and our state wildlife agencies.
And so, Kit, you know, a big part of this, I guess the major part of this, is the conservation side of things, is protecting some of these endangered species that can be found, obviously less and less now, but can be found in forest lands. So can you kind of just explain to the audience here, what are the factors that the group looks at when determining which species needs their assistance?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really a regional-driven process. The Fish and Wildlife Service has species that they're interested in, maybe evaluating for listing or wants to understand their conservation status. And, you know, those species are different in the Pacific Northwest and the Northeast versus in the Southern U.S. And so there's a lot of collaboration at the regional level for NAFO members, and this is the individual representatives of the companies with NAFO's involvement as well, discussing, you know, what are the priorities, what species are at risk of being listed, what types of habitats do they need, and how well do we understand how working forests are providing those species, or if there's some particularly habitat element or habitat structure that might be missing. And so then based on those conversations, we design projects, might be a survey where we go out and we try and figure out whether there's a species present. For instance, we might go sample streams and figure out whether there's a certain mussel species that's present, and are they in abundance or are they rare and declining? And then based on surveys, we also have research ongoing and trying to determine the habitat benefits of things like early successional forest and thinned and open canopy forest for species of conservation concern, or, you know, sometimes they're called species at risk. And those are the species that are usually of most interest, because those are the ones that we want to make sure we can provide habitat for and conserve those, but also avoid a listing, and making sure that we find a way to implement that conservation without any sort of conflict. We're working together, and it's data-driven, it's science-driven, so we implement the practices based on the proven needs of the species.
So this is more of a proactive approach to even try to prevent some of these species from being listed as endangered. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said. It is very much a proactive approach.
Okay. And if you could, what are some of the examples of some of the species of animals that you guys have kind of focused some efforts on here within the last couple of years?
Yeah, in the Northeast, we've focused on the wood turtle primarily. There's been a lot of work on the wood turtle, which is a turtle that inhabits forested streams, small and medium-sized streams. And I think wood turtles have been found to be pretty prevalent in managed forests of the Northeast. In the Pacific Northwest, they've looked at pollinators and forest carnivores and the red tree vole. And then in the South, we've looked at a whole host of species, a lot of aquatic species, so things like mussels and fishes, and then pollinators, but specifically in the South, we've looked at bees. And we've also looked at gopher tortoises and bird communities. And then we're doing a landscape study in southern Alabama, with kind of looking at all of the components of working forests and the different habitats they provide, and more looking at it from, okay, here's the forest, what species are there, and how well are they doing in those habitats?
Well, Kit, I tell you what, this feels like a good stop. Real quick, we're going to take a quick ad break right now and hear a little bit more from our sponsors this month, Potlatch Deltic.
At Potlatch Deltic, we know Arkansas, our forest, our land, and our people. We are here in Arkansas every day, sustainably managing timberland, producing lumber, developing Chenal properties, neighborhoods, and selling recreational real estate. If you're interested in having a place of your own for hunting, hiking, fishing, or just relaxing, visit our website at PotlatchDelticLandSales.com.
Thank you once again to Potlatch Deltic for their continued support of the show. So, Kit, we kind of talked about what the initiative is and who's involved and kind of what you guys are doing, but do you have any maybe specific success stories that, that NAFO or Fish and Wildlife like to tell when talking about this initiative to other groups?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several, but I think the one that would be most relevant and has probably had the biggest impact is that the Fish and Wildlife Service has, I think over the last 4 or 5 years, had several, I don't know the exact count, but a half a dozen listings of aquatic species, primarily mussels. And when they've made those listings, they have specifically recognized forestry with best management practice implementation as being protective of aquatic species. And so, in other words, a landowner doing forest management on their lands, as long as they follow BMPs, there wouldn't be any idea that they would have had a violation of the Endangered Species Act. There's no take, as they call it, under the Endangered Species Act that would have occurred. And for the service to really recognize the 40 years of the good work of landowners implement BMPs and recognize that they're implemented and that they're effective, and putting that in their listing rules is a big deal. And it's really helpful to landowners, so they don't have to worry about, having an Endangered Species Act violation when they're conducting their forest management.
And I think that's a pretty important thing. We've spoken to a couple landowners now on the show, and I think one thing that we try to get across with our audience here is that these landowners aren't out there just trying to juice everything they can off the land. Like these landowners truly love the lands and the animals and other species that just live and grow on their properties.
Yes, Seth, landowners are they're the original conservationists, and they're pretty darn proud of what they do, and they should be. And what they do, protecting streams and protects aquatic life, and it has been, and the Wildlife Conservation Initiative is really just a way to talk about that kind of thing with the Fish and Wildlife Service and help them understand that landowners are just as you described, that they're really interested, they're proud of what they do, and they want clean water, and they want a productive forest. They don't think there's any need to be regulated on things like that, and they're right. They're doing a great job, and they want recognition for that.
It's almost just like second nature to them that, well, yeah, of course, this is what we do to help make sure that our land stays nice and healthy.
It's ingrained in who they are, absolutely.
All right, well, Kit, I know kind of backtracking here a little bit to our conversation before the break there, but you said that when the initiative started and kind of right now, you guys were focusing mostly on the NAFO companies and partners. What are you guys doing to kind of get more companies maybe outside of that NAFO umbrella? What are you guys doing to kind of draw more companies and landowners into the WCI?
Well, the main thing we're doing is we're trying to get the word out. We're letting people know. Fish and Wildlife Service has done some press releases. NAFO's done press releases. And then we're doing things like this podcast. We have to get broad landowners broadly to know about the initiative and to begin to understand it and get comfortable with it. People are going to be a little bit cautious. They want to understand something before they get involved. So letting the State Forestry Association and their members know, letting the state wildlife agencies know, so that we can work on species that maybe aren't as at risk or maybe not as contentious. And then things like the Forest Landowner Association at the federal level, they're involved. And even other industries like agriculture and utilities are starting to notice what we're doing and expressing an interest with the service and in working in the same kind of collaborative, trusted ways.
Well, Kit, is there a certain place that people, any landowners or any members of companies that are curious, that are listening, is there a place that you can kind of direct them to learn more or get in touch with somebody to get more information?
Yeah, I would go to the NAFO website and go to their Wildlife Conservation Initiative section. There's a great deal of information there about what the Wildlife Conservation Initiative is. There's information there about a recent MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, that was signed with the Fish and Wildlife Service. And there's the Fish and Wildlife Service link to their press release there on the NAFO website. So I'd start with the NAFO website for sure.
And we'll make sure we get that linked in the description of this episode as well to make it pretty easy for folks who are listening that want to find more information. You can just find a link there in the description of this episode. So, Kit, as we kind of near the end of our conversation here, there's only so much information we can get with the time allotted to us, but what does the future of the Wildlife Conservation Initiative look like to you? What do you hope to see happen with this effort?
You know, the Wildlife Conservation Initiative is about sustainable conservation and working forest land, but it's based in trusted relationships with the Fish and Wildlife Service and all the others that have a vested interest in wildlife conservation. Continuing to build those trusted relationships, getting to know each other better at the regional field office level of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and making sure that we use data, field data, to drive our decisions is what the future of it looks like. So we can just continue to provide the resources to make this initiative an ongoing dialogue with the Fish and Wildlife Service. That's the future that we need to be in.
And that's another thing we like to kind of stress on this show is the teamwork or the cooperation across different organizations like NAFO and the Fish and Wildlife. Because, you know, one group is very good at what they do, but to do something like this, you need more than that one group to really make it shine and really make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, working forests are a proven wildlife conservation strategy. And we know that species conservation works better through collaboration. We know that the Endangered Species Acts work better through collaboration. And I think, you know, now is the time, Seth. Now's the time for this collaboration. Now's not the time for, you know, lines to be drawn. This is the time to partner and collaborate and build on the foundation that NAFO and NAFO members and the Fish and Wildlife Service have worked hard to build.
Absolutely. 100% I agree. Now, Kit, what do you hope, because I know I mentioned to you that, you know, this podcast is kind of designed for folks who may be outside of the forestry industry. And I guess this kind of question is directed mostly at that demographic, but what do you hope people take away from our conversation today? Again, we scratched the surface on the WCI and kind of what you guys are doing, but it's a good intro into getting people to find more information. But what do you hope people take away from what you and I have discussed today?
Yeah, I would hope that people would understand that forest landowners are conservation-minded and that they're true stewards. They're interested in wildlife conservation. They want wildlife conservation. That's usually one of their three goals. Almost all landowners include that as one of their goals. So it's really important to understand that about landowners and who they are, and that they really have a desire to put conservation on the ground and make it succeed. The second thing is that I would want them to know that landowners are actively working on wildlife conservation with the federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and state wildlife agencies. That those are trusted dialogues, that they're cooperative, and that they're data-driven. Those are the two things, Seth, that I think are most important to, you know, appreciate about our private timberlands.
Well, Kit, is there anything else that you want to say or you want to add before we kind of wrap this up?
No, not really, Seth. I mean, this is a Wildlife Conservation Initiative. It's one of the most exciting things that I've been involved in a 30-year career. And, you know, I think it kind of comes full circle for my personal interest in wildlife and the outdoors combined with my profession. And it's just really cool to see the dialogue develop and for us all to be pulling in the same direction on wildlife conservation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, We're a state association, but we love seeing different initiatives like this being created on a federal level and having bigger groups like NAFO and the Fish and Wildlife and Nikuzi work together to try to get these into states around the country. So I'm sure we're going to be very excited to when you guys finally get something started here in Arkansas, and we'll be right there with you to help in any way that we can. So we appreciate, you know, Kit, you at least giving me 30 minutes for a phone call today and joining us here on the show. So thank you.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks for having us.
We want to thank you guys for joining us this month again. As always, you can find more information about the Arkansas Forestry Association at arkforests.org. That's arkforests.org. And let's not forget our sponsors this month, Potlatch Deltic. Thank you again to them for their support of this show. And we want to give another special shout out and thank you to some guy named Rob/Rob McCormick for the use of our theme song, The Same Love. That's off of his album, The Folkster. You can find more of his music in the description of this episode. We'll have a link to his website, and he's got his music on Spotify as well if you're a Spotify user. So make sure you join us next month when we'll have a new topic, a new discussion, and a new Voice of Forestry.